This is American Adventure, a study of man in the new world, what he believes and what he lives by. Written by John Ely, directed by John Clayton, American Adventure is produced and recorded by the Communications Center of the University of North Carolina, Earl Wynn, director. Tonight's program is about the founding of Washington, D.C., and there's quite a story to be told about it, and about Pierre L'Enfant, the French designer who planned it. For L'Enfant was an unusual man. We will pick up his story when he is at a meeting called by George Washington, at which he is to show the plans for the capital city. Pierre L'Enfant has come to the meeting after having given long thought to the task at hand, but without any plans at all. This we know, and L'Enfant knows it. And Washington and Jefferson and the others are soon to find it out.
I assure you, gentlemen, the Major will present to us a beautiful and finished plan. Come up and take the floor, Major.
Yes, sir. gentlemen, it's quite an honor to be here, but I didn't expect anyone else would. I do want to thank you, Mr. President, for those kind remarks.
Not at all. Suppose you spread your map out here on the top of the desk, Major, and get on with it.
Yes, sir. I suppose you'll notice that here is the river, the Bateau Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Rock Creek here, and this is Georgetown.
I see. Where is the new city, Major?
I don't have it, sir. Not on paper. You see, this is a terribly complex problem if it's to be done right.
Well, do you have any idea about the plan for the city, Major?
Oh, yes, sir. In my mind, Mr. Jefferson.
Where is the Capitol building to be placed?
There is a hill which could convey a broad countryside and perhaps a Potomac, sir.
Why, that's miles to the Potomac.
Yes, sir. 2 miles. But with a park in between.
A 2-mile park?
Yes, sir.
And where would the president's palace go, next to the Capitol?
No, sir. There's another hill here, about a mile or so away.
But, Major, how can you get from one to another?
By carriage, sir.
I am quite aware that a man can go from one place to another by carriage. But why should we go to the expense of building such a street when the two buildings can be placed together?
It is not a street, sir. It is an avenue.
And what is the difference?
By my plan, sir, a street is 160 feet wide, whereas an avenue is wider.
Mr. President, with all due respect to this gentleman, I have never heard of such a plan. Now, I saw Mr. Jefferson's proposed plan, which was very beautiful and certainly reasonable. Let's be reasonable, gentlemen.
In trying to design a city, gentlemen,
the plan Tom Jefferson drew, that was a city, wasn't it, Major Lawful?
Certainly, but it has been known for centuries that you can mark off trees in one direction and cross them with trees going in another and have a city, but there is no art to that.
Well, Jefferson, would you care to comment?
A 5-year-old boy might make such a plan by accident.
You'll have to pardon me for laughing, Tom.
To build a truly beautiful city, you must plan it with the land in mind, the hills, streams, rivers, ridges, forests. And by sensible use of these assets of nature, establish a truly beautiful city, a work of art.
Tom, would you care to say anything?
Oh, now, George, I'm not a designer of cities.
Yes, I just heard Major L'Enfant discuss that.
What was said about my plan, though said somewhat more dramatically than I should hope necessary, Monsieur L'Enfant.
I'm indeed apologetic, Monsieur Jefferson. My temper is so...
Of course, Monsieur. But actually, by choosing a level piece of ground, one may not, to be sure, have so dramatic a city, but a city more practical, serviceable. One that is also beautiful and at reasonable expense.
Except that now, right now, we have a chance which no nation has ever given itself. The chance to build its capital city by plan rather than just by need. Oh, it's well enough to say that the city could be changed at another time, but it could not, Mr. President, because it would not. It is now that we must say, here, by these marshes, we will demonstrate our fate in the future of this country. We will show you the breadth of our nation in the width of our avenues and the length of our parks. We will cause to rise here in our day the beginnings of the city. Oh, too big for us, true, but not too large for our grandchildren. Oh, don't you see, gentlemen, I tell you, we must envision this nation as it is to be, when all nations of the world, yes, even England and France and Spain, will stand and salute her and say, look what brave men have done. Look at that, rising from the Atlantic, a nation free. How can an American plan for less than greatness, gentlemen?
Rarely before have I heard another voice my own sentiments so beautifully.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you for your advice, gentlemen. There are some other matters I must attend to, so excuse me, please.
I wish you luck, monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson.
I think you will design for us a beautiful city.
I hope so, sir.
I assure you we share your dream of a great nation, but the greatness of the nation I see, sir, is judged not by her cities, nor by the buildings of her government, but by the degree of freedom given her people from their government and from their neighbors. My vision is not so much of a nation as it is a man. Not of America so much as it is of the American. Free even to be wrong. Free to disagree. Free to condemn his government if he wishes or his neighbor if he dares. Now, that is a dream as great as your city.
My plan is not to determine the extent of government, Mr. Jefferson, but only to plan a city which will be flexible enough to serve whatever size government may evolve.
I understand that, and I wish you luck, monsieur.
Thank you, sir.
It was not long before the plan was completed and work began on the capital city. And the people of Georgetown and the surrounding area looked with amazement as the men began clearing Constitution Avenue, with other avenues for Delaware, Massachusetts, the Carolinas, Maryland, Georgia, and the rest of the states of the Great 13. And some of the people were impressed by the tremendous expanses in the plan of L'Enfant. Others were unimpressed.
Mudhole, that's what he's a-making. Got so many mudholes you can't drive a wagon through in less than 3 hours.
A village of magnificent distances, that's what it is.
Village monumental.
Town of houses without streets, and streets without houses.
So I saw this Frenchman sitting there on his horse watching the men clear, and I went up to him and I said, pardon me, sir, and I pointed to some workers a couple hundred feet away and said, could you tell me if this here avenue is going to be longer than from here to them men, or is that the end of it? Well, his eyebrows got heavier and his eyes got smaller, like a devil he was. And then he said calm-like, that ain't the length, Monsieur, that's the width. That's the width, he says. Down there a couple hundred yards away, and that's the width.
They say there is to be a wide avenue that goes from the President's Palace to the Capitol building. An avenue over a mile long, and you can see one building from the other. They call this a Pennsylvania Avenue, and it will doubtless become the Avenue of State. Except that it is inconceivable that this tiny nation can ever afford the tremendous expense of paving such a long stretch of roadway. And carriage traffic will be impossible in the wintertime.
Mr. L'Enfant, please be reasonable with us.
I am trying to be reasonable, sir.
For weeks, you have consistently refused to cooperate with this commission.
I have not refused to cooperate.
We are, after all, the legal commission appointed by the president.
I also am appointed by the president.
To work under us.
To design and build a city, the best city that I can.
Under us.
Why, sir, under heaven, the best city that I can.
I will tell you bluntly, L'Enfant, that in the future you will cooperate with us, reasonably and honestly, or you will certainly be removed, even in spite of President Washington.
You do not like my work?
It is not a question of liking or disliking.
I understand. It is a question of size, is it not?
Not necessarily, but of organization.
The president's advisors have said they like my city, but then do they not come to you and say it is too big, it is too expensive, and L'Enfant must be controlled?
Well, to assert that there has been no criticism of the proportions of this city is, well, is to deny what the whole world knows.
The truth is, they would cut my city down to their size.
What about this waterfall anyway, L'Enfant?
Waterfall? I know of no waterfall.
I hear you've planned a waterfall out in that cow pasture you're clearing before the Capitol building.
Cow pasture? That is a park.
It's a cow pasture, if I ever saw one.
A park.
Well, all I know is that cows are grazing out there, and there's room for 1,000 more.
And a waterfall you mentioned. It is not a waterfall, it is a cascade.
Mr. L'Enfant, we are not interested in words, but in facts, figures, prices, reasons. Now, this cascade, I understand, is to be 150 feet long and 40 feet high. Is that true?
It is.
Now, just in case somebody might ask one of us commissioners what in the devil we are building such a cascade for, and where in the devil we are to gather this vast amount of water, Would you mind telling us?
It is to be a focal point laid a few blocks south of the Capitol building, and the water is to be brought in from the sources of Tiber Creek.
Now, I hope all of us have memorized that answer, because I'm sure we'll have need of it in the coming days.
You say this cascade is not to be in front of the Capitol building?
It is to be at the intersection of North Carolina and New Jersey Avenue.
Make a note of that, somebody. Well, now, that's fine, Major. There may be one more question that we'll be asked. How much is this cascade going to cost?
I do not know, monsieur.
Do you think it would be possible to construct a capital city which did not have such a cascade?
Yes, monsieur, but not for this country.
I anticipated that feeling on your part.
Is that all, monsieur?
No, it isn't all. The lots are to be sold come Friday. Are they all marked off for the auction?
Yes, sir.
Will you attend the sale?
Yes.
You will bring a copy of the plan with you?
Why?
To show to the people who are buying the lots. We can't expect them to buy a pig and a poke.
Monsieur, I do not know this pig and a poke, but I do know what I have said, that no group should see this plan until copies have been mailed to all sections of this country, so that all who are interested may have equal chance to buy choice lots. That is my position, sir.
The position of this commission is that you will attend the sale, and there you will show the buyers your plan so that the buyers can tell where these lots are located in relation to the President's Palace, the Capitol, various cascades, waterfalls, pastures, parks, avenues, equestrian statues, canals, plaques, and mud ditches.
Yes, there is nothing else, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Of all the insolent, temperamental, impossible imbeciles, where in the world did George Washington locate him?
One feature of L'Enfant's plan was that from the Capitol building you might look down Pennsylvania Avenue and see the President's Palace, which of course we today call the White House. Halfway between the two, at the point of several springs, L'Enfant planned to build 5 impressive fountains, which is all very well. But unfortunately, Daniel Carroll of Duddington, being sure that Pennsylvania Avenue would never develop to any extent, proceeded to build his house at the place of these springs on a foundation which had been laid before the federal city was started. L'Enfant warned him that completing the house was inadvisable. But Daniel Carroll and his wife wanted a new brick home. They built it. And when L'Enfant sent word for them to tear it down, they rather pointedly refused.
So, they will not tear it down themselves?
They indicated that was their general feeling at the moment, Pierre.
What did you tell them?
I don't know, Pierre. Just tell me what to do when the laborers get the avenue cleared down to the house. Just tell me that.
What would you do if the house were a tree?
I would be astonished.
If the house were a tree, would you not cut it down?
If you say so, Pierre, I suppose I would.
Then take the house down, that is all.
All right, Pierre. And the commissioners?
They must not know until we are on our way. I will be out of town and write them a letter. We will plan that later.
Yes, sir.
Be sure when you tear down the house to have good carpenters who will do as little damage to the material as possible. But tear it down, Roberto. Tear it down.
But the commissioners were notified of L'Enfant's plans, and hardly had the workmen begun tearing down the Carroll home when the commissioners stopped the operation. Pierre, many miles away purchasing a quarry from which the white stone for the Capitol and President's House were to come, heard soon enough of this order. And with his continental anger fully aroused, he wore out one of the best horses in America getting back to the sprawling capital city. He reined up in front of the Carroll house and marshaled his workmen.
I want you to take the furniture out of the house and set it under the trees. And I want the carpenters and masons to go to work at once to take off the roof and bring down the sides. And if the commissioners do not like it, let them go to Philadelphia and talk to President Washington.
So the men went to work tearing down the Carroll house. Good American laborers who'd never torn down a house before. Fact is, not many houses had ever been torn down in this whole continent before. Good masons are awkward when taking apart a solid masonry wall. And carpenters move slowly when taking molding from around a fireplace. But down came the house, down to the foundation, down to the cellar where the wine would have kept cool in summer, and down to the dried tears of Daniel Carroll's wife, down to the line,
that was now clearly drawn between the commissioners and Pierre Charles Lanfranc.
Sit down, Mr. Lanfranc.
Thank you.
I called you to my office to state, Mr. Lanfranc, that the commission is displeased with your recent action.
In my letter to President Washington, I made clear that my authority...
I am aware of your letter. We hope that you were aware of President Washington's letter to you, stating that your actions are to be under the control of this commission. Is that your only comment?
I have here some plans for the winter work.
Mr. Lanfranc, are there any more houses that are standing in the way of your plan?
Yes, sir. The house of Notley Young must come down.
Oh, Lord.
But it's at the end of a street, and perhaps 7 years or so would be time enough.
We must write Mr. Young and relieve his mind about this.
I have already written him.
You have written him? Who are you to write him?
Why, sir, I can write well enough.
My commission should write him, not you.
I have the plan here for the winter work.
Major, with this attitude, there isn't going to be any winter work.
Sir?
The activities of the Federal City are approaching a standstill. This commission is going to have authority over you if we must stop work on the Federal City entirely. We are going to have authority over you.
A few weeks later, as tension continued, L'Enfant's men were discharged, and L'Enfant's overseer was imprisoned for breaking the new rules of the commission. The work on the Federal City was stopped.
President Washington has called a special meeting of his advisors, Monsieur L'Enfant. He told me to talk to you and report back. With all work stopped, laborers discharged, construction at an absolute standstill, and you and the commissioners writing letters about each other,
I've never dealt in personalities, Monsieur Lee.
Be that as it may, I'm here to state that the president feels this entire matter can and must be worked out. But no reconciliation can be reached if you refuse to work under the commission. As law of Congress directs, you must.
I do not object to the commission, but only to the commissioner.
These commissioners will not be removed, I promise you. Then surely your grievances are not so great that...
Great! They are beyond great! When they take my plan without my permission and give it to a surveyor to make changes, a man who knows nothing about cities, they take my plan and twist it into size. Then when they have twisted it, mailed copies of it around the world, and the surveyor has his name put on the design rather than me.
Without question, Major, that is a serious grievance. Perhaps a personal apology
for... Oh, that is not my main grievance. It is a very great grievance, but not the greatest.
Then, please, what is the greatest? I must board the next stage to get back in time for the cabinet meeting.
I do not know my main reason.
I beg your pardon?
I said I have no idea to tell you.
But am I to appear before the cabinet and say, gentlemen, what am I to say?
I don't know. It is difficult to explain even to myself, but it comes to this. I am asked to design a city. I do. Something beautiful evolved in my mind. How can I put it all on paper? I see it evolving, not as a finished work. And even such things that I see will not go on paper without becoming words, thoughts, indexes, figures. You understand?
Perhaps.
But in my mind, I see the beginnings of a beautiful city. So then, these country gentlemen look at my city plan and they see nothing of beauty. They see only words, sketches, lines, budgets, indexes. And then they say, change this, do away with this, narrower here, a bit too much here for our money. They are changing figures on paper, but actually they are changing the features of my city. My plan is no longer pretty. It becomes ugly. And then I say, no, you cannot do this. And they say, why not? We are authorized by Congress. And then it comes time for me to speak in rebuttal, but I cannot. Do you understand?
Not in the slightest.
You see, I am remarkably clear, and nobody understands.
Major, I think you may be saying something, but... What?
I cannot explain it any better.
But what are you explaining? After all, most of the commission's criticism comes down to your disregard for their authority. Not all this.
My father always said to me, Pierre, use a big canvas. Do not paint except on a big canvas.
Why, sir, there have been paintings on small canvases which are rather good, it seems to me.
My father painted war scenes. I have no doubt that he killed more Frenchmen in his paintings than all France's enemies. Frenchmen were brave in his paintings. They were fierce. They were powerful. They were confident. They were victorious. Even in the battles which the history books said they lost, my father painted them victorious in defeat. Oh, I love the spirit in their faces.
I wonder if we could come back to the subject, Major.
I have heard critics come to my father and say, look here now. We aren't all that good, you know. We French, really. And my father would be upon that stepladder painting his soldiers on a big canvas. And he would peer down at them and say, we will be what we envision.
Major L'Enfant, I would like to hear more about your famous father, but at another time. What can I tell Mr. Washington?
You might say, L'Enfant demands a big canvas and an opportunity to say in a city what his father says in battles. That this nation can be what it envisions.
Am I to go back to see George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, and other founders of this nation, and tell them that you send word that the United States can become whatever it envisions? You are addressing, sir, through me, the final authorities on the vision of the United States. Now, sir, please tell me what you have to say about the commission. Tell me what to tell them.
Tell them that I am tired. I am absolutely clear, but I am not understood. I have tried to explain myself, and I have succeeded only in that I have explained myself to myself. And I was clear to me long ago. I have said all I can say, and I have heard all that I want to hear about this matter. Tell them that.
Is that your word for General Washington? Believe me, sir, he is not a man to be played with.
Nor am I, monsieur.
He wants you to stay in your present capacity.
I will not officiate at my destruction of my work. Let him find someone else to love this city for him, to see mud roads as something other than they are, to nurse the city. Your stage will be loading soon, monsieur.
A letter from Tom Jefferson cleared up the entire matter by dismissing Pierre L'Enfant. Actually, there was no other possible course in the political turmoil which had arisen. But the plan of Pierre L'Enfant was followed nonetheless. Some changes have been made down through the years, many of which are now seen to be mistakes. But still, Washington is built around the plan of L'Enfant. And he's buried now in Arlington Cemetery, where he can look out over the city he designed. This man of the New World. This artist who saw everything en grand. Who painted only on the big canvas, who symbolized in a plan the greatness of the coming nation. And as you stand beside his grave, as perhaps you will someday, you will look out and see the monument that commemorates him. Lying there, stretching on the banks of the Potomac, on one of the largest of canvases, you will see the village monumental, the town of magnificent distances, the most beautiful city in America, Washington.
American Adventure is written by John Ely, directed by John Clayton, and is produced by the Communications Center of the University of North Carolina, Earl Wynn Director. The series is made possible by grants and aid from the Educational Television and Radio Center, an organization established by the Ford Foundation. In Paint the Big Canvas, the part of Pierre L'Enfant was played by Charles Hadley. Earl Wynn was Washington, John Bunnitz was the chairman of the commissioners, and Bill Waddell was Washington's assistant, Mr. Lear. Cast members in all American Adventure programs are students, professors, and townspeople of the University of North Carolina community, and American Adventure is produced and recorded on the campus at Chapel Hill. Tonight's program originated from WPTF in Raleigh, North Carolina.
This is the NBC Radio Network.